All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We're going to get started today. It's going to go quick. We're just recording an hour. Questions are starting to pile up, but I think there's still some time. If you want to get through with a question, a comment, a topic, anything at all, just press one on your phone right now. Let's get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry. This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, getting your authority, you name it, we'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and ask the question. We're going to get to those questions in just a little bit. Ah, boy, I'm going to talk about this topic again, and it's autonomous trucks. And this is becoming one of those topics that every time I mention it, I get blasted on Facebook, emails, whatever. But it is a topic we need to talk about in this industry. If you are just going to stick your head in the sand on this topic, I don't know what to do. I am to the point where I don't think I'm going to convince anybody. I think you either believe that this could happen, or you don't. And it's almost like politics. I don't think I'm going to change anybody's mind. That's not why I bring it up. The people who just want to fight and argue, I guess they'll keep doing that. I bring it up and talk about it for the people who want to stay informed so that they see what's happening, they see where the opportunities are, and they can take advantage of it. I swear people treat this as though I'm the one taking their job away from them just because I talk about this. I talk about this so that you don't lose your job, so that you have a future in this industry. But you can't stick your head in the sand. So I just want to go over some things. And I posted something on Facebook this morning. It already has hundreds of comments. And I'm going to go through some of these. I can't possibly respond to these comments on Facebook. They're coming in faster than I can answer them. And normally, no matter what I answer on Facebook, somebody just wants to argue. I'd be stuck there all day. But I do want to address some of these so that you get an understanding of what is really going on. So the reason I brought it up again is because there is another company that has announced its technology, and it's different. It's different in a couple ways. One, this company is building retrofit kits, so companies are not going to have to go out and buy brand new autonomous trucks. Not that that's a big deal anyway, because they will do that. But here's a case where a company's saying, keep the trucks you have, we'll retrofit them to be autonomous. I bring that up because that's a new angle. We haven't seen that before. There's another, they're claiming how they're going to do something. I have mentioned this before, but I think this is the first company that I've seen talk about this technology. Again, that's why I bring it up. This is new again. Let me tell you what they're saying. This company will build retrofit plan is that when the truck is on the interstate, it will be autonomous. It will be driving itself. It will not need a driver to do anything while it's on the interstate. Once it gets off the interstate and makes it from the interstate to the delivery point, their idea, and they already have the technology, their idea is, yes, we will need a driver from point A to point B once we get off the interstate, but he doesn't have to be in the truck. Their technology will allow a remote driver with technology to just drive the truck in. That's an interesting take. I said that could be a possibility because we already have a model for this. They're called drones. Now, the same people who want to argue, oh, we've had autopilot on planes for decades, yet we still have a pilot in the plane. I've addressed that. I'll address it again. You have hundreds of lives on that plane. Nobody is going to get on a plane right now, a passenger plane, without a pilot. It's just not going to happen. And if the technology does fail, which it will, you have hundreds of lives at risk on the plane. And if the plane comes down in a congested area, you have hundreds of lives at risk on the ground. So, of course, we're not going to take one plane or one pilot or two pilots out of a plane with hundreds of lives at risk with one mistake. But those same people who want to use that as an example that we still have a pilot in the plane, no matter how many times I explain why the pilot is still there, they don't want to look at the fact that we have thousands of planes flying around with no pilots. They're called drones. I have pretty good contact with people in this industry. One of the largest drone manufacturers for the military is right here where I live in Sitsu. I know people who work there. I know pilots who work there, and their job is to fly drones remotely. There's no pilots in those planes. Now, could we agree that flying a plane is considerably more complicated than driving a truck? Now, you could argue this if you want, I guess, but just look at the reality. There's a lot more training that you have to go through to become a pilot. You have to start on a certain type of plane and get so many hours of instructions and so many hours of flying. Then you could move up to a more complicated plane, and on and on and on and on and on. Thousands of hours of training to fly a plane. And because of that, pilots get paid a whole lot more than truck drivers do. So I think we could all agree that flying a plane is more complicated than driving a truck. And yet we already have the technology to fly drones into complicated military missions, and it's working really well. Why do people want to keep saying, well, they can't do this, well, they can't do that? Well, an autonomous truck is never... Yes, they can. The technology already exists in drones, and there's no pilots in them. So if you're going to argue that we still have pilots in commercial passenger flights, I've explained why. What do you say when we have drones doing very complicated things with no pilots in them? Now, here's the thing. I don't want to argue about the details of when this is going to happen and how it's going to happen, because we don't know that. And anybody who tells you they do know that, they're probably just wrong. I don't know when and how. All I know is if you look at all of the companies involved, you look at all of the technologies being developed, you look at all of the money being spent. To think that all these companies are spending all this time and effort and money on all of these technologies, and they don't know that they can't solve some of these problems? Do you really think that companies are spending all this money and they don't know that, oh my God, there's going to be this problem they just can't solve? Of course not. They know all the challenges. They know all the hurdles. But there is so much money at stake here that lots of money is going to be spent to make this happen. I just want people to wake up. I don't want to fight about whether or not somebody said, oh, I can't wait to see one of these drones try to back a 53-foot trailer into a dock that was designed for 40-foot trailers. Come on. Really, do you think we couldn't solve that problem if we wanted to? Of course we could. So let's stop arguing about the little details and the minutiae of what a truck could do or couldn't do. And let's start talking about, as drivers and owner operators, what can we do to make sure we still have a job in this industry? That's the conversation I want to get to. spending so much time arguing about whether or not this is going to work. First off, I don't know which technology is going to make it to the market first. Is it going to be an autonomous truck with a driver, a remote controlled truck, a platooning? Maybe all of them will hit the market, and then the winner will be the one that has the best safety record and is the most efficient and the most cost effective. That's what happens in a free market. So it's coming. I don't know how or what it's going to look like, but I'm going to keep talking about it because I want to know what's going to happen. This certainly affects me and the business I've worked on for 30 years. But again, I don't want to argue about the details. Let's get down to the point of it's coming. What's it going to look like? And what are the opportunities left? Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Robinson. Kevin Rutherford. So I do want to go through some of these points people keep bringing up and explain why they're not an issue. Because if we can get past these things and understand them better, maybe we can get down to the important conversation we need to be having. Where are the opportunities as this comes? That's what I want to get to. So I've seen things like people say, oh, you know, the drivers aren't the most expensive part of an operation. What about fuel and maintenance and tolls and insurance? Well, yes, if you add all those things up, they cost more than the driver. But in any operation in today's world, truckload carriers, I study the financial statements. I've been doing it for decades. Wages are number one, always across the board. It's more than fuel. It's more than truck payments. It's more than maintenance. It's more than insurance. It's more than every other item. And if you want to add all those other items up and say, well, this is more, the company could save more in these areas. No, the company can't save more in those areas. What technology would they use to save on fuel? They can save a little, but they're already doing that. They're not going to make any big difference in their fuel cost. It is what it is. How are they going to save on maintenance? Maintenance costs go up every year because the truck technology gets more and more complicated. They're not going to be able to save on maintenance. There's nothing they can do to save on insurance in any significant way. What we're saying here is a technology that didn't exist before. And when it becomes available, will be a huge savings for this carrier. Nothing else will even come close. So let's drop that argument that the driver isn't the number one expense. They clearly are. It's just math. I can show that to you. And they are the place where companies are looking at this technology and saying, holy cow, look at all the money we can save. There's no other place in their operation they can do that. So let's stop that argument. Somebody posted in this one that companies won't even spend the money to replace their 20-year-old trailers. Well, what does that have to do with autonomous trucks? Why would a company replace a 20-year-old trailer? There's no cost benefit to them doing that. That trailer's paid for. It's made its money multiple times, but it's still functioning. This is just math, guys. This is business. I'm a little afraid that I'm hearing comments like this from people who are in business and don't even understand the basic economics of business. You wouldn't replace a 20-year-old trailer that is still serviceable. Why would you? All that would do is increase your cost. We're talking about decreasing cost. So I know what's happening here. People are afraid. They're operating out of fear. They fear they're going to lose their job if this happens, and they are grasping for anything they can say, oh, but it's not going to happen. I'm here to tell you something is going to happen. Something is going to change in trucking in a very big way because of technology. And all I'm saying is anybody who tells you that it won't happen or it will happen just like this, they're probably wrong. What I'm saying is it's going to change. Let's pay attention to it. Let's work together, talk about what's happening, and look for the opportunities. Again, I could go through so many of these right down the list. People say, oh, well, they can't even get the emission technology right. How are they going to get this technology right? Well, first off, they never wanted the emission technology. There was no cost savings in that for the carrier. That was forced on them by the government. This isn't being forced on anybody. This is just an opportunity to save money. Big, big difference. There's lots of money to be made in this technology, in getting this technology right. And as long as there's a lot of money available here, potential, companies are going to keep moving forward and working on this. All the things about, well, I saw another comment. Well, how's that autonomous truck going to get out and put on chains? Real simple. There's been a product on the market for over a decade called auto chains. They're awesome. That's all it takes. Done. They're already installed on the truck. As soon as the computer recognizes a wheel spin, it could activate the chains. Guys, we could argue this stuff all day. We got to get past this and get to the point. There are at least, I just found a list of at least 20 major corporations around the world that have set the goal of having self-driving cars on the market by 2020. We've talked about the fact that this technology will be accelerated in trucks, not cars, because there's no real economic advantage in cars. It's just convenience. But in trucks, there's a huge economic advantage. That's why it's going to come there first. And if you have 20 companies racing to make autonomous cars by 2020, what do you think is going to happen in the truck market? And I'm talking companies like Google, Apple, Ford, General Motors, Toyota, Hyundai, Honda, PACCAR, Daimler, all the truck manufacturers, Uber, Otto. This list goes on. Tesla goes on and on and on. These companies are scrambling to get this technology to market. Let's stop the arguing about the details and let's start talking about what we're going to do as drivers and owner operators to ensure that we still have a piece of this industry. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's head off to California. Kermit, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Morning. I got an oil sample for you. Could take a look.
All right. Let's see here. So we have some potassium showing up, which could be the very beginning of a coolant leak, possibly. Potassium went up quite a bit from 13 to 54. The sodium went up from 4 to 8. So it kind of doubled. This isn't enough that you're going to be able to find a leak yet. The great thing about oil analysis is we can identify problems so early that mechanically we won't even be able to find them yet. And this may be one of those cases. This could either be some sort of an environmental contaminant, something we picked up off the road. Some of the chemicals they use on the roads in the wintertime can show up as potassium. Or it could be the very beginning of a coolant leak. We're probably going to have to wait and see. Probably going to have to see what happens on the next sample. But, you know, it's always kind of a heads up to keep an eye on your coolant level and things like that in case we do see it. We also had a big jump in aluminum. That's a really odd metal to jump up all by itself. I almost think that may be a contaminant. There are some greases that can be. Has this engine been serviced or worked on in any way recently?
No, Kevin. It just got to put a Pittsburgh Power tune on and a crankshaft dampener. Nothing else.
Okay. Yeah, both of these are something we want to keep an eye on, the potassium and the aluminum. But it, like, you're not getting any other wear metals at all. Like, iron went from 14 to 15. That's nothing. You have zero chromium, zero nickel, zero copper. Lead is at one, but it's always been at one. You have zero tin, zero cadmium, zero silver. So normally, if we have a problem in the oil and we're getting wear metal, we would be getting wear metals, and you're not. Just aluminum jumped up, which is kind of odd. So there's nothing here that should concern you yet, but we just want to watch those two things and see what happens. The numbers are so low, there's no problem. They're just a little odd. So I think we're going to have to wait till the next sample and see what happens.
All right, Kevin, we'll do that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Let's see. You know what? We're coming up on a break. So I'm going to take us into the break. And when we get back, we'll get to more of your calls and questions. Check out the website. We always have stuff we're adding constantly. Lots of new snack foods for the truck. Really clean, paleo, keto kind of snack foods. We have awesome grass-fed fermented beef sticks that are the best beef sticks I have ever tasted. These things are so good. And they're really, really healthy and clean. They're a great snack to keep in the truck. They don't need refrigeration. They'll last over a year. Can't beat these things. So we have them in four flavors. Jalapeno's my favorite, by the way. And I'm shocked. Jalapeno is our slowest seller right now. And it's my absolute favorite. Go check these out. All four flavors are really good. We have some new nut butters. We have some new oils that you can use. We've got, well, I was going to say we have monkey griddle, but it's almost always sold out. So we're working on that problem. Check out the website, letstruck.com. Check out the store. Great stuff. We'll be right back. Stick around. Kevin Robinson. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. I'm going to head off to Georgia. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. And I value your opinion to kind of give you a short background of what went on with me in the past leading up to my question. 2015, I was in a I paid off my truck from a bad lease program where I was netting 13 cents a mile off of 115,000 miles a year. And I called you and was explaining the situation to you, and you basically told me to keep doing my numbers, hang in there, that I'd be able to get it paid off. And so 2015, I was able to get this lease program paid off, and I appreciate that advice. And came over to lease the Landstar, and worked on the load board for Landstar for about 3 months. But then I was taking the advice that you were saying, building relationships with different, you know, with different people that you work with. And it's what I began to do. And I only worked 3 months on the load board with Landstar and was able to find a dedicated account that I've been on now coming up 2 years, you know, coming on 2 years now. And and building that relationship, you know, with the agent, and then also able to build a better relationship with the shipper, it's kind of got me into a conundrum, which brings me to my question, is that at this present point and at this time, the relationship is so great to the point to where I need to break away from this dedicated account, because I'm in the process. Well, I'm going to be in the process of getting my own authority, but it's more of the shipper, the relationship that I have with the shipper. They don't want to see me leave, but then I understand the, you know, you can't go back and solicit the shipper after you get your own authority. But my question to you is building that great relationship, is it possible that you could build too great of a relationship till it hurts whenever you break ties? Or, and also, how do you break ties whenever you're in a great relationship with a shipper like that?
You know, that's a really good question. And I don't hear this very often. People aren't thinking this way. So I like this kind of thinking. And I have to deal with this a lot. We build very, very close partnerships. When we build a partnership, it's close. To the point where it's almost impossible not to become personal friends with some of the people you do business with. And we haven't had to terminate many partnerships, but clearly some, and for all kinds of different reasons. You know, there are some companies that wanted to stay with us, loved our partnership, but just didn't have the budget for it for whatever reason. And one of the things we've always done is when you have to make that split, you make it in a way that you don't burn bridges. There are products that I no longer have any formal business relationship with, but you'll still hear me promote those products because I still believe in the company. I still believe in the product. I still believe in what they're doing. And I'll continue to promote them. We may not have that formal arrangement anymore. So that's kind of best case scenario. Something happens, we have to dissolve the partnership, but I still believe in the company and the people. There are other times where companies haven't held up our standards for customer service or whatever it might be. And we've had to terminate companies for that. And I've said, and I've been very clear about it, I still believe in the product. It does what it says it's going to do. But I had some issues with their customer service, and we just can't have that. That doesn't mean I won't still say, hey, look, the product works. If you want to deal with maybe less than stellar customer service because you want this product, then the product still works. You know, we've had a couple splits that haven't been that nice, but we always try. We always try, if we have to make that split, make it as good of an experience as possible, because at some point I may want to go back and partner with those companies again. Things change all the time. So, you know, one thing, always try to make the split as positive as you can make it. You know, leave on good terms, no matter how nasty they're being. We need to take the high road and leave on good terms if we have to do that. So I think that, you know, putting this in context of what I opened with today and the big topic of autonomous trucks and what kind of future do we have, the things that you're doing are exactly what I think people should be doing. You are building relationships. You're looking to solve problems. You're looking for that freight that requires somebody who knows what they're doing and builds relationships and solves problems. Those are the kind of people that computers and autonomous trucks can't put out of business in today's world. Who knows what could happen in 10 years? Right. But no technology today that can replace a critical thinking, problem-solving human. So we need to stop arguing about can computers back into a really difficult dock. Hell yes, they can, and they can do it better than humans. But they can't replace relationship-building, critical-thinking, problem-solving humans. So that's what I want to get people to start focusing on. What could you be doing in the industry that an autonomous truck can't do? But don't think of it in terms of driving skills, because it's been shown we can program computers and technology to outdrive and outperform humans when it comes to these kind of physical tasks, but we can't get them to solve problems, and we can't get them to do critical thinking yet. So that's where I think the focus should be, and that's what you're doing. You went from a lease purchase, lease to a carrier who basically told you what to do all the time, to a carrier that allowed you more freedom, and you took that freedom and built relationships and put yourself in a good position, and now you're ready to move on beyond that. And I get it. There's always fear when we do that. But you're facing that fear and say, okay, if I'm going to do this, how do I do it right? That's the recipe for succeeding in this industry in the next decade.
I do appreciate it so much. You know, we had this conversation before, and the people in the shipping department, they was like, no, you're not going nowhere. You the best. You know, we're not going right. to let you go anywhere. But then at the same time, I got goals and that I want to succeed on my own in that area. And so, you know, it's kind of put me in a conundrum in that area. And I appreciate the information on that. I really do.
You know, and here's the thing. This company may not be happy that you're leaving. That's good. That's because they value you so much. And if you leave in good standing, they get it. They understand that. They may not be happy about it. But if the situation ever changes, or you have an opportunity to do business with them in the future, the way most reasonable people would look at it is he moved on to an even bigger challenge. He's the kind of partner we need. So they'd be happy to take you back. So that's really what I'm trying to get people to the point of. It is a changing industry. You can either stick your head in the sand or up some other part of your anatomy and say that it's not going to happen, or you can start paying attention and say it is happening, but that will create lots of opportunities. Where are the opportunities? Let me put this one more way. Let's say that I'm wrong, and I might be. I'm not saying what's going to happen exactly. I'm just saying things are going to change, but let's say I'm wrong. Let's say nothing changes. Let's say this technology completely dies and doesn't go anywhere. Am I in any danger, or have I put myself in a bad position because I'm watching this? I mean, I'm not running out and making any major business decisions based on this information. I'm just watching it. I'm just saying, let's pay attention. So if we're paying attention and reading and talking about this and watching it, if it doesn't happen, are we in any real danger? I don't see any downside to paying attention and assuming it could happen. But on the other hand, if you have your head in the sand or up some other orifice of your body and it does happen, you are in danger. There is a huge downside to ignoring this. So no matter who's right, it still just makes sense to me to open your mind a little bit and say it's possible. Maybe it won't happen, but it's possible. So I should at least identify that it could happen and pay attention. Or so it seems to me. We'll be right back. Stick around. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. We're off to Tennessee. David, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I was just going to make a comment. I mean, I know everybody's run this in the ground, but there are people, they're not passengers on a plane, but there's many people on the highways around these optometrist trucks that will be on the road. And if something does go wrong, there is an issue of safety because we have to be responsible for those people as well as our own driving habits to watch their habits. And I know that the trucks will be, efficient.
Well, let me address that because I'm glad you brought this up. One of the other comments I keep seeing over and over and over, just wait till the first one crashes and all the lawsuits start. People who say that are the same people who post 15 pictures every day of trucks crashed, almost always Swift because everybody picks on Swift, but they show picture after picture after picture after picture of trucks crashed. Those are with human drivers. Why are we okay with that? Of course, if an autonomous truck crashes into another vehicle, there is a life at stake. And I'm not trying to minimize this, but that's one life. Or maybe it's 10 people in a van. But that happens every single day today. And if we had an autonomous truck without a driver and it crashed, that's one less person that's going to die in that crash or has the potential to die. But if a plane crashes, you guarantee everybody on board is going to die. And it's hundreds of people per one event. An autonomous truck might run off the road, hit a pole, and crash. And nobody dies. But the point is, no matter how bad the autonomous technology is, even if they screwed it up completely, which they're not going to be allowed to do that, you would cut the death toll on the road by at least half. And yet, if we said we're going to put autonomous trucks on the road, oh, by the way, we already know they're going to crash. There are some glitches. The technology is going to crash. We know it's going to happen. But they will crash half the time that humans currently crash. Shouldn't we all be jumping up and down and saying, oh, my God, bring them on. We will cut the death toll in half. But no, we're going to say, oh, my God, an autonomous truck killed somebody. We can't have these things. I don't get that logic.
Right. I see what you're saying. I was just saying, and we have to make the safety decisions, to dump the load in the ditch and bypass hitting somebody in a situation of ice or whatever, or something goes wrong. Somebody cuts somebody off in front of you in a three-lane highway. We have to make that decision of don't hit the bus, the Greyhound bus, don't hit the car with the family in it.
I get that, but don't we all?
I'm just saying, will the computers already do that?
Well, let's look at that technology and what's already happening. One of the most common accidents on the road are rear-end collisions, right? We've been talking about this since vehicles were created. 100 years we've been dealing with people not paying attention, driving too fast and following too close and running into the back of somebody. One of the most common accidents on the road. So how are we fixing that today? Not by teaching humans to be better, because that didn't work. We're solving that problem already with technology. We have radar. I had radar on my truck back in 2001. I bought a truck with a radar system that would literally stop the truck if the vehicle in front of me started slowing down. And I can tell you that system could anticipate the problem before I even knew it was happening. And that's 15-year-old technology. Today, we have all kinds of vehicles on the road that already make up for the driver's lack of attention and the driver's lack of skill by stopping the vehicle for them so they don't have a crash. So we're already using technology to make the driver safer. So why wouldn't the technology be the ultimate replacement of the driver? We already know the technology works better. Because if we could have stopped rear-end accidents by training drivers better, we would have done that a long time ago. It doesn't work. But technology certainly solved the problem.
Well, thanks for your response, Kevin. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. You know, I just think the more we talk through these, and I think the reason we have to talk through this is because it is very emotional. People are afraid and they are operating out of fear and they're not thinking clearly. And I want to just get people to just think clearly. So as an industry, as a tribe, we can start finding the opportunities. That's what I want to get to. So if we need to hash out all of these fears and these myths, then let's do it. Let's talk about it. Let's get past this so we can start problem solving. Let's start using some critical thinking skills so that we don't get replaced. Let's to Oregon. Al, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I've got a contract there, just some pages of a service contract. I just purchased a 2014 T680 and with a Cummins. And I want to go to Pittsburgh to get the ECM modified and all that stuff. But if you read the contract, unfortunately, it says there any tampering with the ECM, changing the perimeters.
Yes.
Void the warranty. Let me. If you see that, so.
I do. Yeah. Let me address this.
Yeah.
Because the problem isn't necessarily that the contract says you can't alter the ECM. I get that. The problem for me is the contract. Period. This is what's called a third party warranty company. I think these to me are the worst contracts ever. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of warranties, period. But we need to talk about two different kinds of warranties. If I buy a truck from Kenworth and it has an ISX engine and an Eaton transmission, I will probably get a warranty on the truck from PACCAR, but they made the truck and they're going to warranty it. I'll get a warranty from Cummins on the engine. They made the engine. They'll give me a warranty. And the same with Eaton and their transmission. But those warranties are okay. I just don't put a whole lot of faith in them. We know all the problems that they don't want to do warranty work. They don't get paid as much to do warranty work. No matter whether it's free or not, I have the downtime. So warranties are just not a big deal to me. Now, third-party warranties. That's where you have a company supplying a warranty and they didn't build the product. They don't have a whole lot of incentive to warranty this truck. PACCAR, if they don't honor their warranty, at least somewhat, there's a good chance you're not going to buy a PACCAR product again. That's a big deal. Same with Cummins. So they at least have some incentive to warranty and to make that product right. These third-party companies, it's not their product. And I will tell you just from experience, these companies are notorious for taking your money over and over and over and over to pay for the service contract and then denying every repair. And somewhere in this contract, they'll find a reason to deny almost everything. I hate these contracts. So for me, I would tear this thing up and say, who cares? That contract is not worth the paper it was printed on, and I would do what I had to do to make this truck efficient. I would have never had a contract like this in the first place, but if I did and I was in this position, I would just ignore it. They're almost worthless.
Yeah, I purchased it. I do have it, and I'm in that maybe that 15-20% of people where, you know, in Dave Ramsey's book, how he says get a credit card for a year and they don't pay it off. And, you know, there's only a small percentage that do take advantage. I'm that disciplined person. And I used to be a service advisor before I did trucking 26 years ago. I've had three service contracts, aftermarket contracts, what we call them in the automobile industry. And boy, did I get my money's worth big time. They paid themselves over.
It happens.
So I agree what you're saying. Yeah, I agree. And I used to be the service advisor. I used to call the the service contract people and tell them, hey, this part needs to be warranted. Yeah, I had to fight with it. Believe me, I know exactly what you're talking about, but I did it. I used to work off commission. I made a lot of money.
Yeah, so you're familiar with this. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so I'm familiar. Should I still go for it then?
I would. And here's another thing. Here's another thing. And you understand how these fights go. But technically, by the law, I don't care what their contract says. If I alter the ECM, they can't void the entire warranty. They can only say, we're not going to cover things that were caused by your ECM change. They can't say, we're not going to cover your differential. I guess they might be able to make an argument if we turned up the horsepower that it was the horsepower that tore up the differential. That's how complicated some of these fights could get. That's why I hate these contracts. So if it were me, I would do the ECM modification. The odds of it ever conflicting with anything are slim to none. There's the music. I'm all out of time. We'll see you next show. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right. We will see you here tomorrow for the Power Hour and general questions. We'll see you then. Thanks.